Hello and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview with me, Charlotte Hogarth-Jones. This week I sat down with the owner of Odyssey 3, a 33-metre Bonetti that's just had a major facelift thanks to the people at Pendennis. We caught up at the site of Richard's other big venture, the imposing Grantley Hall Hotel up in Yorkshire, which he bought with his mother Valeria and has spent in the region of £70 million restoring to its former glory. So today I'm somewhere a bit different, not by the sea or in London at our boat offices, but up in Yorkshire in the UK at a rather lovely 18th century manor, now a very impressive hotel called Grantley Hall. I'm here with managing director Richard A. Sykes, whose mother bought the hotel back in 2015 and together they renovated it to make it the stunning luxury property that it is today. Crucially for us, however, Richard is also the owner of a rather lovely 1967 Bonetti, Odyssey 3, a 33 metre which I'm told is also fresh from a major refit. So I can't wait to hear all about her in a second, especially having seen the pictures. But first, Richard, many thanks for joining us.
Welcome to Grantley Hall.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So I thought we'd start at the very beginning, because I don't know very much about you at all. And it is a bit strange to me sitting here in the English countryside and, you know, describing it as sort of quintessential English country garden, which seems miles away from super yachts and Monaco and boating and things. How did you get into yachts and yachting? How did you kind of come to be in this world?
It's quite an easy one, really. Everybody loves the Mediterranean, in particular the climate and holidays. And I suppose the vintage difference between what we decided to do with Odyssey was founded on the new boats, Sunseeker. I'm an ex-Sunseeker owner, and I love the brand as a new brand. But we wanted something that was more of a timepiece. So it's like collecting art,
yeah,
or jewellery, or vintage classic cars. I'm a mad classic car fan.
Yeah.
So you wanted something that doesn't just do the task, but does it in a different manner. It's almost like having a bespoke experience. So the classic side of being part of something that has history is half the experience when you go on her. So that's how we got into looking at different types of boating and yachting. Yachting as opposed to hotels, it's a total contrast in what we've got at Grantley Hall.
Yeah.
Because you wake up with a different sunset and the hour of sunrises and a different place to have a drink. And often the enjoyment of owning a yacht is sat on land admiring it. and we love new things as well, but things with character and history, you know, we have more passion for older things.
And had you kind of got into yachting when you were younger? Like, is it something you did as a child or anything like that? Or did you come to it kind of as a later in life interest?
It was later in life for myself. Mum's always been around yachts before she got divorced about 10 years ago.
They had
a series of quite nice yachts, but certainly I
do. You know what boats they were?
They're mainly Fed ships, and the bigger ones, the big old, because they've got, or even the new Fed ships, have got character and style and substance.
Yeah.
Do you know, so the steel hulled ones are particularly good. You know, those are ones that Mum's had a lot of experience in. All my interest has been more speedboats, smaller boats where you can get access into little bays. I own a small Riva Junior, which is fantastic. We have that
beautiful
down in Mallorca.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a work of art, so you don't have to go anywhere on it. You can sit and just admire it.
Yeah.
That's again a 1967 Riva.
Yeah.
But boating generally just gives you the opportunity to explore things that a lot of people don't see. So you see coves or bays from a different perspective. So love of the ocean, yes, from being little, we used to have a place in Malta many years ago. And I got brought up having summer holidays there with a speedboat and a little apartment there. And that was just fantastic, the way of life then, to love the ocean. It was a big, big thing. Land hotels, even Grantley, is fantastic, but they have their limitations because they're always in the same place.
Yeah, definitely.
So the good thing about any boat, whether it's a speedboat or a 300-foot yacht, is that change, like the experience and weather. I love the challenges of bad weather.
Yeah, the challenges of bad weather rather than going around the Med somewhere very, very warm and balmy.
Yeah, I quite like that.
My wife doesn't.
I had a 60-foot sunseek in Manhattan and it was fantastic around the Balearics. But there was only ever me out, you know, skipping it. I didn't have my own crew or anything. And I just love the excitement. I've got a lot of respect for the ocean. And we've had a few near misses, but I think the excitement, the adventure of being on the ocean is still something quite romantic and challenging, and the spirit of how a boat interacts and your holiday or or way of life interacts with the ocean is a big thing.
Definitely.
I could see myself living on a boat. You
know? Really?
This boat in particular was one that I'm 57 now, and I'm looking at 10, 15 years in the future, you get more time off.
Yeah.
It's almost like a gentleman's cruiser.
Yeah.
So you can see it as a lifestyle move, not just a holiday or a vacation.
Yeah.
It becomes a way of life, which you wouldn't do. I personally wouldn't do with the modern yacht.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different, you know, different,
it's a different
feel.
Thing. So it's like an old Georgian house, you know, with an old Georgian house. And I think that has character and style. It's not a brand new Monaco penthouse.
Yeah.
But it's got memories in it.
So what a back catalogue to have come from. You know, Sunseekers, people absolutely love them and repeat buy them. And Fed Ships, you know, they're famously kind of unbeatable in terms of their quality and things, or at least some people say. And now you've gone for a Bonetti. Were you looking, you know, you said you were looking for a classic. Were there particular things that you were looking for, sort of specific design elements or kind of things that you knew had to be on there, or did you just see her and fall in love with her?
Well, this boat's been on and off the market a couple of times before. I particularly liked the steel hull from a safety point of view, really good ocean going boat. But the canoe stern, crosses the line between an old boat and a new boat. It's got a lot of romance in it. So that style, you know, long pointy front, steel hull and a canoe stern is something that we look for. So Bonetti, one of the only manufacturers that we saw deliver that.
Yeah. And how did you find out about the boat? Did someone tip you off about it, or did you kind of see it and follow it around for a few years?
We followed it around and then lost track of it. It went over to America. But we got a local broker called Darren Cooper on Mallorca. Mm. Who, again, I know him through classic cars. We used to buy and sell classic cars together and refurbish Mustangs. And we put him on notice. He's also a yacht broker, independent yacht broker. So he spent a couple of years just trying to find the right boat, and we looked at lots of boats.
Really? How many do you reckon?
Probably about 15, 18 boats.
That's quite a lot. Looked
at, but most just weren't anywhere near the mark.
Yeah.
They needed too much refurbishment, but we spent a lot more on this than we originally planned.
Yeah, it's always the way. You're not the first owner to say that.
Yeah. So it's a totally different project. Not on my grandly hope. Yeah. Started with one thing and then created another. But he was he certainly knew what we were looking for. And there were very few out there, surprisingly. Mm. You know, even since then, we've kept our eyes open for other boats, but just for interest. And there aren't many.
Yeah.
The owners tend to keep them like this because they're not... they're not easily traded either. Values are questionable. You know, by the time you sink the cash into something like this, they're very rarely worth what you've put in them.
Yeah.
So you have to buy them with long-term ownership in mind.
Yeah.
So that was that's why a lot don't, you know, change hands. And they're not for everybody. It's not an easy one to charter.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to really love it, but it's like a floating Georgian house.
Yeah.
Not without its limitations, but if you like that sort of thing, it's perfect.
And then how did the broker told you about this boat. Did you kind of come on board and think, sold? Or was it then, you know, a longer process to actually acquire her and own her?
It was a very short process, actually, because we were up against once we knew the boat was back on the market at a very sensible price. There was a long history to that.
So you had been stalking it a bit then?
Yeah, within the space of literally 3 or 4 days. The two or three other people that were looking at it, a German-led consortium looking at buying it, they almost agreed terms on it, but not got the funding arranged.
Right.
And we knew one of their project managers and quietly knew a lot more about the boat within a couple of days than we would normally have done.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a bit disgruntled by the consortium that weren't paying him.
Yeah.
So we were in the right place at the right time. And a friend of a friend introduced me to him, and then quickly we find out, why don't you come and work for us if they're not performing?
Yeah.
This all happened within a few days in Mallorca.
And were you out there at the time, or was this frantic phone calls to him?
I went over there specially to see this project manager because he'd clearly got access to all the information.
Yeah.
And the preferred buyers, you know, they were his clients. But luckily for me, they weren't looking after their project manager. And I'm a chartered surveyor by profession. So almost, you know, you get it from the other side of the fence. We were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Without that, and I'm not going to say who that project manager was, but he did a fantastic job. Our clients had let him down, and he jumped ship. So we were very lucky to. And then within literally 2 weeks of that meeting, we bought the boat.
Fantastic. That's pretty slick going, isn't it?
But we still were with limited knowledge.
How did you feel you were going into it with eyes wide open, or not quite as open as you'd have liked?
Not as open as they should have been.
Yeah.
So I think that we learned, like lots of things you learn as you go along the way. But we got an expectation, a budget, and a rough plan of what that the boat was going to do for, you know, three generations of our family. From Mama was funding it, it was her little, you know, project.
Yeah.
I took on all the acquisition and the refurb. And,
yeah.
And it was really, I'd sold my Sunseeker. I was looking 10 years down the road when, you know, you could see yourself almost living on the boat and getting the family to come out and see you. That's still the dream, you know.
Really?
Because that boat can, you can do that with this particular boat.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest, it's not. It just is a lovely, lovely, lovely boat.
And so then talk me through the refit and everything then. Sort of what state was she in when you got her? What did you do? I know that it happened at Pendennis, but who else was involved in the project and that sort of thing?
So between the project manager we brought on board and Darren Cooper, who knew a lot about classic cars and boats, there's a lot of similarities, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Rotting steel and interior fits, you know. Together with boats, we've got a few more systems and that's a bit more complicated, but it's the same principles, really. And then we just looked at who worldwide, or certainly European-wide, would be capable of doing the refit.
Mm.
And at that stage, we thought that was going to be what we call a 30% refit, so a facelift and some hull work and, you know, not rip everything out.
Yeah.
That finished up being an 80%. You know,
really?
Because of the challenges of... we knew what we bought, but then getting it to a level that me and Mum were happy with was a big departure. You know, it was three times the budget that we really set out.
And is that because you have a real eye for really good quality, or is that because actually once you started doing it up, you thought, actually, we need to do the whole thing now because it's not going to look good with only that 30% done?
I think it's a combination, really. It's false economies when sinking money into a boat refurb like this. If any system that you left on the boat or any wiring, anything like that, can cost you tens of thousands later down the road. So once you've started a project like this, my advice would be going with open eyes, but spend the money.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you don't, you don't know what problems you're going to uncover.
Mm.
So we were very lucky that we went with Pendennis, who did a great job at educating us.
Yeah.
They weren't just spending the money. I spent a lot of time, and my two boys at the time worked with the business, and my daughter does as well now. We had a dozen trips down to Falmouth.
God, so this really was a family project then, all of you.
Yeah. So Mum loves, she's got a great attention for detail on colours and fabrics and everything else. But then engineering-wise, all constructions and properties, my background. So I treat it like a property project, like a refurbished old building. But Pendennis did a really good job at setting the tone and educating us. So gave us choices along the way.
And as it was going along, did you have a sense of, oh my God, this project's spiralling out of control? Or was it something that you enjoyed and you were just thinking, yeah, okay, let's do it properly?
50-50.
Yeah.
No, it definitely spiralled out of control.
Yeah.
And I think then the reality of how much certain things cost was a bit of an eye-watering experience.
Yeah.
Relying if it said,
yeah. Are there any particular things that you thought, oh my God, I can't believe that's something we're doing now?
How long have you got? I think the steel hull was one that we didn't realise how thin the steel on a port like that is.
Yeah, I've heard that before. I've heard stories of people poking holes in and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe this is something I own now.
Well, a full ultrasound done of the hull itself, which is the bulk of it, and you find that, you know, 20% of it's less than 2 millimetres thick.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So that was an eye-opener. So there was a lot more cutting and chopping and welding of the hull itself. And then once you've done that, you look at your engines. Well, they were original Detroit engines. We didn't want to do a small job or a full region. You had to take the engines out, or you have to cut the hull to get them out and send them back to the UK to be reconditioned or rebuilt, as it happened.
Yeah.
But then every single system is the same. On top of that, then we've got a big appetite to maximise external usable area on the boat. So all the top sun deck was all taken off and put back. And
really?
Barbecues.
And did you change the kind of layouts at all?
We tried not to do. We improved access by the spiral staircase up to the top deck, which is a lot bigger and more open than you'd find on most similar boats. That's what we call the entertainment space. It's 50% bigger than most boats.
And so important now for these, if you're chartering, that's really something people want, I think, is more and more outdoor space.
Yeah. The staff and crew quarters, we spent quite a lot of money on getting that right, because for longer charters, it's really compromised space compared to a new boat. So we did what we could. But then largely the bedroom layout and everything else, we left that as it was. So try not to affect the character or charm. That, I think that was 90% there.
And how would you describe the look now? You know, if you were looking at before and after pictures, what's different in terms of the interiors and the colours and things?
There are a few subtle ones that you wouldn't notice from there's a couple of things that have been done to the boat in a couple of previous owners, where they'd not quite got the lines down the walkway right. We had to reform some of the, to send them back to original. So glancing at the boat, and we changed a few of the flybridge details to make it look less like a fishing trawler.
Yeah.
So you kind of, on a bad day, you can get a really poor shot of the boat.
Yeah, yeah.
So the front of the flybridge was a bit lumpy, so we subtly changed some of those details to make it look a little bit more elegant. But not that you'd instantly notice. We notice a big thing that we did again, one of the downside of a boat like this compared to a new one is accessibility. You know, with the canoe stern, there's no easy way to get on or off, whether you're on dock or whether you're, you know, side moored. So one of the biggest expenses was to put a really nice drop-down passerelle. So it was a balcony stroke, you know, big stairway that went into the water. So whether you've got a tender or whether you're up alongside a berth, it's fantastic to get.
Yeah, those small things like that do make a big difference as well, don't they? Maybe not immediately apparent, but actually as a user, those things really add up.
That's the single thing that transforms the boat to be an old vintage and one that you can use.
Yeah.
Because getting on and off a boat, especially when you're at anchor, these boats are typically not easy to get on and off.
Yeah.
Now it's absolutely impeccably good.
Yeah.
We've got zero speed stabilisers, which also help. It just keeps the boat, which is quite narrow. Narrow beam, and that doesn't help. But when you've got the stabilizers, brilliant.
Yeah.
So them two things were just fantastic investments.
Yeah. And how was it? I mean, I can't imagine building a boat together with my family. It'd be chaos. How was it? You know, you said your mum was involved, your children were involved. Did you all see eye to eye all the time, and it was really fun, or were there some kind of debates going on?
I think we've got absolute respect for mum. Mum funds everything, and she was. She loves to be at the front end of the design side of things. So we find a natural balance. We've never, even with the hotel, it's the same principle here. You know, she empowers me to run it and build it and everything else. But we do it with absolute respect. So
yeah.
We talk and chat about everything, but we're all very similar. So, you know, there's my mom, there's me, and then three children in the business. And there's never a crossword, never... We just all chat about things. We've all got different things to add, and we've all got quite different perspectives, but not totally different.
So yeah.
Just evolved that way. You know, that's the way we tend to run the family.
Yeah.
So mum run it with me, that's where I'm with my kids. And it's, I think the word respect comes in. So we all work along the same page, you know, we've got the same page.
Well, that sounds incredibly plain sailing compared to lots of people's experiences. So how long did the refit take in total?
Well, you best part of 2.5, nearly 3 years from acquisition.
Yeah.
A long project, lots of long lead times for certain things. But Penn Dennis did a fantastic job on it. They are brutal when it comes to detail as well.
Yeah.
It was lovely working with them, great people. And we made a bit of a social of it as well. It wasn't just a project. It was exciting to have long weekends down there. You know, the team down there are a unique team, and I think I'd like to think they enjoyed it as well, because it wasn't just, you know, a yacht broker or agent coming down. We really did immerse ourselves in it.
Yeah, very hands-on.
And certainly the finished project is as much about what they can do as it is what we added to it.
Yeah. And what about the history of the boat? Because do you know much about her kind of past? She obviously does have an interesting history.
Not specifically, no, not the different turners. I know she came from the last chapter was in America, but sort of been around quite a bit and was a well-known charter boat, well, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But certainly in fact, one of the previous owners did come, I met mum on the boat a couple of years ago.
Mm.
She'd not been in Pam that long. So they were unbelievably impressed with what they'd seen.
And is that where the yacht is now, Palmer?
Yes.
And is that where, are you sort of hoping to charter her just round that area or do these longer passages, I think you mentioned?
Well, we do longer passages, you know, but the Balearic is this great choice round there.
Yeah.
You know, for this type of boat, especially if you're typically, you probably have a week at a time on a boat like Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bit like a classic car, you wouldn't want to be in it for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there are some downsides to being in the boat, especially if you get bad weather and you want to go from Ibiza to Formentera or wherever that is. You know, you have limitations on a classic. So the primarily Balearics, although, you know, not discounted, maybe next season in 2023, doing the South France and then Croatia and, you know, working a calendar around that.
And how do you feel about it? It's obviously a kind of funny time for charter at the moment because, you know, we had this sort of boom over the pandemic where everyone was desperate to get out on a boat. And then obviously now we've got the situation in Ukraine and still some kind of restrictions in place because of COVID. You know, how has your charter season been? Are bookings good?
Bookings are fairly good. I'd like them to see them a little bit stronger.
Mm.
And you're right, there's less demand out there for certain product, especially niche product like Odyssey. I think it takes years to find customers that come back year after year. And so it's very new. We just chartered for the first time last year.
Yeah.
It's not essential that we charter, but it's just a realistic cost
recovery.
So actually using the boat becomes less of a burden.
Mm.
So, you know, you can cover half your cost, you're doing well, you know, you get, you know, between 6 or 8 weeks a year.
Yeah.
But then obviously if it's too successful, you don't get a chance to go on itself.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask. How much time have you actually managed to spend on board so far, and are you hoping to spend longer?
Yeah, not a lot. And same at the moment, you know, since launching the boat, we've had 18 months where you've not been able to travel, you know.
Yeah.
We've still got some of that now, you know. Mum's 78, bless her, and she's desperate to get on a plane.
To
go, but, you know, she's not vaccinated either, so she's still struggling to get into places like Spain. So, it's going to be an interesting year.
Presumably you've done some trips on it yet, or not much?
Yeah, no, she's just a fantastic boat, especially around Mallorca itself. I think Mallorca is such an underrated island because you can go to the same place at different times of the year. And they're different. There's probably 15 places on Mallorca. You wouldn't need to go anywhere else. You know, if you're only yachting, let's say 6 weeks a year, that'd be a typical year for myself in the Balearics. There's plenty between there and Ibiza. It's just a great place to go yachting.
So what's your kind of ultimate day out? Say I'm in Mallorca and I said, let's go. What does a day on Odyssey 3 look like? What do you love doing and where do you love going?
So I love getting off bright and early, so then you go and have breakfast somewhere, so you probably have a...
How early is bright and early?
Well, you'd be dropping your ropes if you were in anchor, you know, it's 5, 6 o'clock.
Okay.
So then by 7, 8 o'clock, you were on anchor somewhere totally different, maybe en route to where you were going, but then you'd have 2 or 3 hours, you know, get a bit of breakfast on top deck and then steadily go and find and have lunch somewhere. Typically, I'd, you know, go on land for lunch. You know, lunch is a big thing, especially in Mallorca, and different to what it is in the UK, where the dinner would be the highlight for me. It's a little bit of a lunch, and then you tender off onto land on shore and on a hillside and look down at the boats and we're in a lovely, you know, turquoise bay and a bottle of red, and then back to the boat, you know, for a bit of a sunbathe. And then the evenings in Mallorca are brilliant and tranquil and fantastic for just watching the sun go down and not really trying to overdo your evenings, you know.
Sounds very chilled out. That sounds like my style of, so you're not off on, you mentioned speed earlier, you're not kind of off on jet skis and doing kind of thrills and spills. Is that a different, do you keep that for the cars?
You wouldn't integrate that with Odyssey.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much a classic luxury trip.
Yeah.
Rather than, and if you want to go, I love some trips where you used to have jet skis and everything else, or Axopar speed boats where you just go for 2 or 3 days, but you have a dry bag and that's what you do.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit more kind of rough and ready.
Fire into Portales at 5 o'clock and, you know, have a few early drinks and make an end of it. And so it's a different trip, that.
Yeah. And what sort of guests are you going after in terms of charter guests? Is there a kind of profile of person that you're looking for? And I wondered, are they the same guests that you're hoping come to Grantley Hall, or do you see them as two kind of different pools of people?
That's a good question. I think the typical audience that have found Odyssey perfect for what they want are an older couple, mm-hmm. and it tends to be more couples with children that are older rather than younger ones, just because of all the things you mentioned before. There aren't as many toys on Odyssey as what you find on a new Sunseeker.
Yeah.
So typically retired people, typically people that are not in a rush to get back to work. They're just like, you know, that retired over 50s will probably be 70% of the interest. Then the contemporary couple that might like that bit of flair is a bit like our customer at Grantley. The backbone of the hotel is a country house hotel, but 70% of what we offer is contemporary.
Yeah.
So we're getting increasingly a younger audience finding that, so they, you know, they're not just being put off by the exterior of Grantley. The same with Odyssey. I think it's an unusual market. But it's just finding a niche itself. We find younger customers tend to want to tick all the boxes of the things that you can't offer on an old boat, so they discount it. But if they ever came as a guest,
yeah,
they'd be pleasantly surprised at how much better in some regards it is when you want a quality trip.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got a really good chef on, you have a dinner on the aft, like we have, you know, feed the captain's wife does all the cooking. She's fantastic. So you sat on the back on a Benetti.
Yeah.
And it's a different experience than you could have a Sunseeker twice as big and three times their money, but it's a different experience. Not better, it's just different. And for me, it's more relaxed, it's higher end.
Yeah. And in terms of the boats themselves, other than kind of, you mentioned that Benetti did this very specific design that you wanted, are there any other differences you notice between, you know, your old Sunseeker or spending time on a Fed ship, or really is it just a design difference more than anything else?
I think it's mainly a design difference. Some of the bigger Fed ships, once you get over 30 metres and then you get into a 50, 60 metre Fed ship, well, they handle like an old boat. You've got a big, heavy,
yeah,
typically steel. So ocean going becomes fairly similar. Mm. And I think the way a boat rides the waves is often part of the experience. You know, if you're on a Sunseeker, you're going 2 or 3 times as fast, you can get from here to be really quick.
And, yeah.
You know, it tends to set the tone. It's like getting in a modern sports car. I love Mercedes as a car. We've got a GTR car. Well, but if you're getting that, you want to drive fast.
Yeah.
You get somewhere, you're a bit more highly strung. You've had a great experience compared to an old Bentley or an old Rolls Royce. No matter, you know, you tone down the whole journey.
Yeah, it's a good comparison.
You know, so it's exactly like that. You know, you can't relate it to cars.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of, so, you know, doing up yachts, doing up hotels, are they similar? Are they, you know, can you compare them in any way? And if so, what's similar about them and what's different?
I think there's a lot of similarities. Yeah, you need an architect or designer.
Yeah.
You need a project manager, crucial to bring all the trades together. And then all the trades are the same. You've got the fabric of the building, you've got plant machinery, and you've got the aesthetics, you know, and it's very, very similar. Yeah, the trades people will be, your engineer on a boat will be different to a contractor or civil engineer on a property, but they'll have the same skill set.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a RSJ beam on a boat as it is in a hotel, it's, you know, engineering is engineering. One floats, one doesn't. You know, so it's, yeah, very, very similar.
Yeah. And did you find any difficulties, whether it was kind of, I don't know, working with people from the yachting industry that you hadn't before, or really did you find it pretty straightforward?
I find some of the niche crafts that you would want in yachting and boating are very specific.
Mm.
And the lead period for, let's say, wood timber work was a typical example where we had to bring in our own carpenter, basically.
Really?
From York. Peter Thompson's of York did all the joinery at Grantley.
Mm.
And he wasn't our first choice. We just assumed that it'd be too expensive. But then when you get into the yachting refit market, you realise it's cheap.
Yeah, really. So you did bring some of your own kind of suppliers yes. in then. That's interesting.
Yeah, from outside property, because they could match the old timber work, and Pendennis had some great internal skill sets for cap rails and banisters and things like that. But where you wanted to, a bespoke piece of, let's say it's a writing bureau and had to fit in, you wanted to take one out and put a different style one in, but match with the panelling, etc. Mm. We found that we had to bring in specialists to help out. And I think Pendennis were really impressed with, because Peter Thompson York up one of the finest carpenters in the country, really.
But hearing you speak about the boat and about the hotel, and you sort of make renovations sound quite straightforward and easy, whereas I'm sure lots of people wouldn't do such a good job of it. Do you think you and your family have a kind of instinct for it? Do you think your mum has kind of passed anything on, and that she has a sort of sense, or do you think that's just practice and good guidance?
I think it's a combination of things. Primarily, you've got to have the passion. Secondly, you've got to have the funding to give you the choices to design things that you want to do. A lot of people will have the ideas. It's like when you're doing an extension at home, if you get any magazines you want, you don't have to be a perfectionist to do that. You just get ideas from other people. Mm. But then you need the team to help you deliver it. You can't do it by yourself. You need to keep an open mind and change directions when you come up with problems. Same with any project. But more importantly, if you haven't got the funding to deliver that, it's very difficult to deliver it. So we've been lucky that we've had everything. Yeah, natural ambition, natural desire to create something and add value. And keep an open mind to surround yourself with people that know better than you do about certain elements of it. So it's the same process, whether that's a car, property or a boat. It's a relatively straightforward process.
And kind of as we were walking through the hotel just now, you're saying hello to everyone, and people clearly like you and like talking to you. Do you think you're quite a kind of people person? Is that something that is also one of the strings in your bow?
Very much so. I think my mum's brought me a bit up, and me and my family were all state educated. My children went to first comprehensive school. We could have sent them anywhere. Mm. But wanted to be normal, humble people. We have a lot of respect for everybody. We're all on the same side. We can't run this hotel without every single member of staff. And I think we don't just say that, we genuinely mean that. And it's a big part of us just being content as well. You never strive for something that you can't achieve. Or I think the word humility comes into it. Be prepared to put your hand up when you can't do something or you make mistakes. So mum brought me up. Very, very uncomplicated. So we're generally quite content, although we strive for excellence. You do that as a team. You're quite humble in that approach. And I think that, we like to think that. And we love the journey. We love, creating things and sharing time, We're in hospitality, I like to be the other side of the fence as well.
Yeah. And I was going to ask a bit more about sort of what your business background is. You sort of mentioned you were a chartered surveyor. So what was your training? Have you always worked in kind of family related businesses, or did you do your own thing for a while before joining up with your mum?
Yeah, cross section. I left school. My dad had a range of scrapyards in Barnsley. So at 16 to 18, I worked through the scrapyards, the motor vehicle side of things. And the idea was I was going to progress to sales. Didn't get on particularly well with dad, so I went back to college and construction and civil engineering, and then urban land economics at Sheffield Poly, and that was the property degree you got then to become a chartered surveyor. So then majority of my life I've worked for other people then, King Sturges as a practicing surveyor, and then gradually got into small property development works with venture capital partners, and then eventually did enough part-time to jump ship and do that for myself. Again, with venture capital money, not bank money, and 15 years, good and bad, we had the highs and lows of the property booms.
Yeah.
That made me quite robust in dealing with adversity. So then we diversified. Instead of all property, went into window cleaning, grounds maintenance, pubs, and that got us into hospitality.
Gosh.
So instead of putting it all in property, which meant you had to get involved with people and staff, and instead of just running a small property business. So that was really good grounding. And then the last 12, 13 years of running half a dozen other venues in my own right, a company called West Park, we cut our teeth in hospitality. And hospitality is not difficult if you take the people out of it.
Yeah.
It's all about managing people. So you have to become more refined, you have to become more amenable, and you have to become more corporate these days. So I'm going through a big phase of not being a dinosaur and learning and adapting, especially at Grantley, where, you know, running, you know, the 400 staff, that's quite a task in itself. Creating yeah. the building and creating the brand is relatively easy if you've got the funding. But managing the people, I'm sort of excited the way I'm having to change myself to
yeah. And do you feel like you do have to kind of grow in that area and that you've not cracked
yeah,
that yet?
Massively. I'm really? Like halfway there, yeah. Sort of, it's the first thing we say at induction. You look at yourself first or the family, and, you know, we know the brand and what we've created is well above what we're capable of running. And that sounds strange, but we're learning, and we surround ourselves with really good people. But every day is a challenge. Every day is something new. And, you know, we go and look at competitors. We see what they're doing better than us. And we're really patient as well. But the expectations are to deliver, you know, one of the best hotels in the world, which means you've got to look inwardly. You've got to look at, you know, how you're managing, how you're inspiring people. You know, that's exciting. You know, mum's 78. She loves the projects. It keeps yeah. her young. You know, we love working together and love that learning curve, every day getting up and learning something new, not pretending you know anything, and just getting up and being inspired by other people.
It's fantastic. And it's interesting when you were talking about, you know, being very successful in property and then things being difficult and diversifying and going into different areas. That reminded me of an owner I interviewed some time ago, a guy called Andy Scott, who owns a sailing yacht called Elton, who was kind of in a similar situation in that he was in property and then there was sort of he had some difficulties and had to, you know, go off into different areas. And he was kind of very, very ambitious and described himself as that. Do you think of yourself as ambitious? Do you feel like you're an ambitious person? Or is it more just a case of you have a natural kind of interest in business and that takes you in different paths?
I always found my dad was unbelievably ambitious. But his barometer for success was financial.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's not financial. I love time, I love choice. If I choose to come to work 15, 16 hours a day, that's a luxury. If I need to be at work, well, then I'm not performing that well.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that's the first thing. Secondly, if you're spending any time at work or a way of life and you're not adding value to anything, I don't see the purpose. Do you know? So yes, I'm very motivated and driven. A, to give me choice and time, and you need profit and cash to give you choices. But I'm quite relaxed. Well, a lot of people wouldn't agree with this, but inwardly I'm quite a relaxed individual that likes enjoying what we've created. That was all the purpose of getting involved with Odyssey, because at that stage, you know, before we got Grantley, we were looking at a different lifestyle where you were semi-retired. And I think that's a boat like that gives you a focus. And even if you never got on that boat, it gives you something to drive for and yeah. aspire to.
And can you imagine yourself retiring on board there or living on another yacht at sea?
I could, certainly. My wife may disagree. She's a bit more of an anxious sailor, I think, because when I've done it myself, we've expected too much of her and the family
yeah.
rather than any crew.
Been pushing it to the limits.
Yeah, pushing it too much.
A bit too much, yeah.
So every time she hears an anchor change.
Never again.
But I think that but certainly my own time, yeah, I just love to. Very easily, that's the tribe gets me up in the morning. That's why we sat in an office now. Boats and pictures, yeah.
But it's not just boats, is it? Because you've mentioned cars about three times, and I can tell that you absolutely love cars. And it's interesting you said you sort of started off in automotive, and so it's obviously, what is it about cars that you love, and what are your favourite, what do you own, what do you love, what kind of driving do you love?
Well, that's a long question.
Okay, yeah, we got time.
Yeah, so primarily, I love classic cars, but I also love modern cars as well. But a classic car is, again, it's when you drive a classic car, you have to have empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't drive it. You have to respect it. It's an experience. I've always liked cars for my own driving pleasure rather than trying to impress anybody. So sometimes you have quirky cars that might not actually be worth an awful lot, but might drive really well. You know, an E-Type Jag is a great example of something that's not a really, in comparative terms, not a really expensive car, but it drives beautifully.
Yeah.
An Aston DB5, which is probably the cornerstone of any collection, and value-wise, yeah, it's much more valuable than most of my others. And it's a beautiful thing to own. Half the interest in that is because everybody knows it's a DB5. It's a, you know, James Bond, you know, iconic car. So you turn up anywhere and it's a bit of theatre.
Yeah.
You know, but also driving it, it's like driving an old car. But again, it's 1967.
Mm.
Everything's 1967. So you have a range of cars that do different things for different seasons, different, whether you're on a short trip, long trip.
What's your most fun car? Which you have the most fun with?
That's an easy one again. I've got a Mustang GT 500.
Right.
Which is, it ticks all the boxes. It's a big V8, big American V8 and four seats. And, you know, it's a bit of youth in it. You know,
yeah.
You have to drive it to, you know, enthusiastically.
Yeah. And so, you know, you've got cars, you've got the yacht, you've got your work, obviously. Are there any other passions, or is it really, I mean, it sounds like you'd have your hands full with all those things.
We do other things. I love mountain biking with my wife. We tend to do quite a bit of that.
Mm-hmm. So
we've got a caravan up in the lakes, which we like to just disappear to the other weekend. I love racing cars. I've just started racing again. I used to race cars until about eight, 9 years ago. And then we got busy, so I didn't. So I'm racing again this year for the first time. So,
really?
And I like racing classics and new cars, but Ginetta. Car this year, but yes, I love racing as well.
Do you watch the racing? Do you watch the F1?
I do watch it. I'm not a big avid fan. I'd rather partake rather than watch somebody else do it.
Yeah,
but it's been a fascinating season last year and a couple of rounds this year. Yeah, so I do like watching it.
And when you mentioned earlier, when you said, you know, you're quite a laid back person, you sort of commented, "Oh, I'm not sure everyone would agree." How do you think your friends and your family would describe you if I went to them and said, "What's Richard like?" What do you think they'd say?
Single minded. often tries to get a pint out of a half pint glass. I'm always trying to do lots of things.
Yeah.
I love just cramming things into my life.
Yeah. And is that because you like being busy, or you like maximising opportunities?
I just like being busy. I like the effort at the end of the day when you've done lots of different things.
Mm.
Sometimes it can be very tiring, and nobody get you have to try it a little bit harder. But,
yeah.
But just like, I hate wasting time.
Yeah.
Time's very valuable. So just like cramming lots of things in, you know, so I've started golfing again. I love golf. You know, golf's totally different to what I normally do. But I love that. It's a totally different discipline. But going back to what other people think, they think of a single-minded, can be a little bit grumpy.
Okay.
I think that strong-willed in certain areas is a double-edged sword. You know, I think that can be seen as a little bit too blunt sometimes.
Do you think you're quite stubborn?
Yeah, very stubborn. Yeah, I like my own way. I like to control things. I like to... But I suppose deep down, it's only because I know other people would benefit from that. That's quite a confident statement, I would guess. You know, I'm a bit older and wiser, and if I'm happy, everybody's happy.
Okay. And going back to, well, for the record, you seem like a lovely person. But going back to yours for a second, so, you know, you seem very happy with Odyssey 3. Are you looking to buy other boats? Do you think you will? If someone came along and wanted to buy this one, would you sell? What's your kind of position at the moment?
Again, an interesting one. Everything we tend to own, you have to have an open mind. So the boat is always on the market for sale. It's chartered. If somebody came along and wanted to charter for 12 months, you probably would. You would always find something. Even something like Odyssey, even if, and Mummy's like that as well. So you might get attached to something, but that never ever closes the door on something new. You know, if I said to Mum tomorrow, and I don't tell my wife this, but if you tell Mum tomorrow, we found another hotel and we could do it even bigger and better, and it's on an island somewhere.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, she wouldn't just automatically say no.
She'd say, tell me about it.
Yeah. And I think that my wife would want a divorce.
Yeah.
She just started visiting now after sort of nearly 6 years of creating and it being the centre of our world. So there's a balance again between when you chase something and when you wouldn't.
Mm.
But generally, if we get to the pinnacle of being the best hotel in the world, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
You don't just stop, do you?
Yeah.
So you have to. I think as a family, you generally want challenge.
And is there a boat out there that would tempt you? Is there something you think, oh, well, if I knew this was on the market, I'd probably be interested?
Me personally, I've always fancied something that was a little bit more explorer.
Really? Yeah.
That wouldn't be what one would like. Probably not the family, but I think that to combine a project like that, where you could dovetail with a team of people that did a bit of research, Arctic or Antarctic, or you could do something like that, adds a different dimension to boating. I could get quite excited about that.
Yeah, it's incredible. Who wouldn't want to do that? Well, my last question was just, you know, you've mentioned your mum quite a bit, and I just wondered, you know, you seem to have a very close relationship. How has that come about? Do you always agree on things, or is she, like you say, you are a bit stubborn? And what does she think of the boat now it's all finished?
She loves the boat. Going back to mum, we're very close. I think the first husband left my dad when I was only a couple of weeks old.
Right.
So she was a single mum back in 1964. I had to go out and find, you know, she got no work, no anything. So she went to run a market stall and got a little baby, as I was at the time. So that creates, I've got three stepsisters, but to have your first child and then to be left alone. And I think that creates the foundations of that relationship.
Yeah.
And then she got married again. She had a very, very hard second husband, but that gave us the discipline and the knowledge and some of the funding when she got divorced to create Grantley. So, but it was a very hard taskmaster, that his barometer was finance, so he had no empathy and no real input to me as an individual, whereas his mum did. So we've always remained really close from that point of view. And I think that over the years has given me the respect that how she's conducted her life in challenging circumstances. And she's by herself now. She just likes enjoying life and still loves challenges. So I've shared that.
Yeah.
Very, very similar in personality.
And if your own family don't want to go into the family business, how will you feel about that?
Oh, they could do what they want. There's no storybook or plan. But I'd be staggered if they didn't, because we all get on extremely well and we share that life journey together. And if I'm going to spend more time on the boat, they need to sort the biggest asset out of the all.
Absolutely. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Hopefully they can run this so you can go off and spend all your time on Odyssey 3. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this week's Big Boat interview. Don't forget to tune in later in the week for our news podcast. And of course, if you don't want to miss that or any other episodes, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or Apple. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you later this week.